Blog Talk Radio.
Naples, Florida, it's the David Bowers Awards with your host, the David Bowers, and special guests, the band Court E, the lovely and talented Erica Kane. And this week, we've got an incredible guest. I still can't believe it myself. We have the one, the only, the true rock icon, Tommy James, as well as the entire crew here at the Asylum. I'm John Bon Jovial, and now, here's the David Bowers.
Well, thank you so very much, John Bon Jovial. Good afternoon, and thank you, listeners. Welcome all to the David Bowers Awards, the show where every show is an award show. And thank you to Titty Bingo, our house band, for our theme music. Be sure and check out their latest CD, Live at Pardinelli's. You're going to love it. These guys know how to rock. This is the show where every show is an award show, and you and our guests pick the awards. No nominations, no naming panels, no phony voting, just simple awards. Somebody does something or says something good or stupid, they get an award. Simple as that. If you get someone or something you think deserves to be awarded, write us at david@thedavidbowers.com and put award in the subject line. And today we've got an award right off the top. The first David Bowers Award goes to one of last month's guests, A.E.D., who introduced her latest CD, What Are Dreams Made Of, right here on our show. That CD has been honored with Parents' Choice Award for Children's Audio Storytelling by the Parents' Choice Foundation. You can learn more about Parents' Choice at parentschoice.org, and you can check out A.E.D.'s music at her website, A.E.D.com, and her award-winning album, What Are Dreams Made Of. It's on CD. It's available right now. Congratulations, A.E.D., and we'll look forward to having her back on the show again in the very near future. Remember, if you've got someone or something you think deserves to be awarded, david@thedavidbowers.com, put the word awards in the subject line, and who knows, maybe you'll hear your award on our show. Today we have more special announcements. You can get in on a music first we've got coming up later in the show. Especially if you collect autographs, you're going to love this. And we've got another first for you, too. Stay tuned a little bit later in the show. We're going to tell you how you can be the first to get in on the David Bowers gear. Okay? We're going to announce that a little bit later on the David Bowers Awards show today. Hey, John Bon Jovial, you know, I guested on Blaze and Rise radio show here on Blog Talk Radio this past Monday and did some music news, and we have a lot of fun on the show. And my buddy Letterman was telling me
Wait a minute. Letterman?
Yeah.
You mean like David Letterman?
Yeah, he was telling me about New York City.
You and David Letterman are friends.
Yeah, David.
I didn't think you had friends.
Yeah, I do have one or two. I mean, Letterman's a little different because, you know, we're not in the same city, so we don't work together. We don't compete with each other. So it's
you've hung together in the past, and you know, went after, you know, out drinking in the bars and what have you, right?
Well, like I said, we don't work in the same market, and we don't compete with each other. So there's no conflict of interest there or anything. You know,
basically what you're saying is that you know who David Letterman is.
Well, yeah, we go back a long ways together. Well, okay, he doesn't really know about that. But no, he was telling about New York City. They've got a new thing for tourists in the city now. They have free bikes. They have them at bike racks at various places around the city, and you can go and just pick up a bike and ride it to somewhere else in New York City, and you've got your own transportation. I mean, doesn't that sound like fun, riding a bike in New York City traffic?
Well, yeah, that would be a blast, and I think probably about as great as anticipating how much of that hand sanitizer you're going to have to use on the seat.
I think we know why David Letterman is the way he is. He's been riding too many of those bikes. But we did have a great time on the Blaze and Rye show. We always do. And we got into some very interesting conversations, one of which we talked about this whole Miley Cyrus sex stops at 40 thing. You probably heard about that, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, she's... Yeah, I
heard about that. Well, did you heard too, of course, where 66-year-old Suzanne Summers rebutted that whole concept, saying she has sex with her husband twice a day?
Well, I'm so glad to hear that, that's great.
I knew you'd appreciate that. Well, we got to thinking about it. Rye and I, when we were on the show, we were talking, and we got to thinking, you know, with Miley's concept of people over 40 and everything, and with all the problems in Washington, maybe we could solve a lot of problems by sending Miley to Congress.
We're going to send Miley Cyrus to Congress.
Yeah, and
a little
maybe,
young blood in Congress, huh?
Yeah, and at least maybe then they'd stop screwing people over 40.
Oh.
All right, John Bon Jovi.
But Tip your waiters and waitresses, ladies and gentlemen.
Who's up on the show, John Bon Jovial?
Well, you know, as I had said in the intro earlier, David, we have got an incredible lineup today, and of course we're going to be featuring the one, the only, the inimitable Tommy James, and hear a little bit about his history. It's an absolutely incredible story that he has got to tell us, going back to the 60s and working their way up from there. We've also got a great band that we're going to be talking about called Court E. We've got Erica Kane, who's going to be coming up next, as a matter of fact. And, of course, our good buddy Rob Parisi is going to be hanging around with us a little bit to give us a little bit of a tutorial on Rockstar 101. So, David, I'll go ahead and let you take care of the cordials here, the introductions for our lovely first guest, Erica Kane.
All righty. First off, we're going to give you some Erica Kane music. Now, Erica has been the voice, or is, I should say, the voice of the theme for the VH1 TV series Hollywood Exes. And that has brought her to the attention of a lot more people than knew about her before. But she is an extremely talented and versatile artist in her own right. And right now you're going to get to hear a little bit of Erica's music, and then we're going to talk with Erica. So here she is, Erica Kane. This is called Let It Go. We'll be right back. Erica Kane. It's called Let It Go. And right now we're going to let it go and bring Erica on board the show. Erica, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, David and John. Thank you so much for having me on your awesome show.
Oh, well, thank you so much for honoring us with your appearance. It's so glad to have you aboard. And we're just thrilled to be able to share you and your talent with our listeners and let them get to know more about you.
Absolutely. Cool.
Now, how long have you been doing your music?
Well, I've been into music ever since I was a little girl, simply because my parents are musicians and they work 9-to-5 jobs to raise me and my brother, but music was always their passion. So on the weekends, they would travel and they would play in certain bands. My father's a songwriter, so I got a little bit of the originality influence from him. And as I grew up, you know, it just became something. It was a companion in my life, and I felt, why not make a career out of it? You know, everybody else is doing it, and why can't I? You know, so.
Absolutely. And before we go any further, I want to take, since this is our awards show, I want to give you an opportunity to make your award to whomever or whatever you'd like to honor with your award today.
Wow. Well, there could be lots of awards. I'd like to give an award to Sinead O'Connor, actually.
Okay.
She's really doing a lot, speaking out on the major concerns of the music industry. You know, let aside what's going on with Miley Cyrus. I'm an independent artist, so I deal with a lot of the struggles in the industry, and I see, you know, I really observe what they're doing with these artists, and so my award goes to her.
Fantastic. Yeah, you can definitely say, again, she's speaking out. She is definitely an outspoken artist. And
well, she's been around for so many years, and she has, you know, taken on, you know, some controversial projects, but also some very, very worthy, you know, charitable projects. And she really, truly is an artist.
Yeah, and she definitely will speak out.
Right, and I feel like, you know, there is an urgency right now for the people and the fans to become aware of what's really going on. So that's why I say that.
Well, I have to agree with you, and that's something that anybody who knows me knows that I have stressed for, God, forever, the fact that we have to, as people as well as Americans, we have to do more than take an interest and complain about things in our lives. We have to do our homework. We have to learn about what the subject is, whatever it is, whether it's a cause or it's politics, whatever it is. Got to learn about what it is, find out the truth about it, and not be afraid to stand up and believe it. Say what you believe. And yes, I think that's very important. Mm-hmm. Now we're gonna take this right from the top, because you have exploded onto the scene by virtue of doing the theme for the VH1 series Hollywood Exes. And the first thing I think our listeners would like to know before we even get into the background is, how did you manage to pull that off?
Well, it was a combination of creating really good music and people acknowledging it. We actually were contacted from the creative department from VH1 who knew about my music, and they were really interested in using it to a pretty large capacity. I've had 37 placements of my song on VH1 since then, so it's just been remarkable. It was definitely really good luck on my side, and once they put the theme song for Hollywood Exes, you know, a lot of things took off from there, so I'm definitely grateful for that.
Oh, I'm sure that helped open a lot of doors for you. And you brought out a couple of very good points there. One of the things that we try to do on this show, and of course we do have a lot of the named talents, much of whom is, you know, contracted to labels and everything, but we do a lot of emphasis on emerging, upcoming, and indie talent. As a matter of fact, we have another indie rock band that's just starting out that's going to be on the show in a little bit that does some very neat rock music that I think people are going to love. But you brought out the point that, yeah, first thing you said was good music, and that's a key, something we've talked about so many times. You've got to, the artist today, if you're going to make it, you've got to know the entire business. You can't know just how to play your instrument. There's a lot more to it than just getting up on stage and belting out of tune. And good music is a basic part of it, and you've got to know how to make the good music. And then, of course, the rest of it, you've got to know how to market it, how to get it out there, how to meet the right people. And that's why we have a feature we call Rockstar 101, where we go into this and we have industry experts every week talk about what it takes. But you brought out some very good points there in being a dedicated artist, working at your craft, because it is more than just playing music, and it's obviously worked for you. You, as you said, it's definitely opened a lot of doors for you, and I bet it's a thrilling experience. Now, did you get to go and work with the people from Hollywood X's?
No, I've talked to them. I've interacted with a bunch of the ladies on this show, and I'm going to probably be maybe performing at some of their events that they have, but I haven't yet. But I'm definitely going to link up with them. And I'm excited because I heard that there's a possibility they may take the show to different cities and have Hollywood X's Atlanta or Hollywood X's Miami. And,
wow.
Yeah, and they're going to continue to use my song, which is remarkable. You know, so
right.
Keep my fingers crossed.
Absolutely. Now, one quick question. We also have a question in the chat room. John Bon Jovial is telling me, but one follow-up question to what you just said: is there any chance that Erica Kane might appear on the show?
Well, we're actually working on that. We're trying to make that happen. So again, let's keep our fingers crossed, but we are in the middle of trying to make that happen for sure.
Well, I will encourage all of my listeners out there to keep your fingers crossed, and you might even drop a line to the producers and say, hey, that girl who sings the theme song, is she ever going to appear on the show?
Right.
John Bon Jovial, we have a guest in the chat room with a question for Erica.
We sure do. We're getting a lot of action on the chat room for this show today, David. But we do have a question from a good buddy of ours, Blazin' Rye of the Blazin' Rye Radio Show, of which I know, David, you're very intimately familiar.
We just spoke about that a little while ago.
That's right. Erica, the question that Blazin' Rye has for you is that, are you aware how similar your name is to Susan Lucci's All My Children character, Erica Kane? And if you are, is that maybe where you got part of your name from?
Yeah, I'm definitely aware of her. Erica Kane is really, that name existed before Susan Lucci. That name has always been somewhat of a character. I forget the original person who came up with the name. Aaliyah, one of my great influences, beautiful artist who passed, unfortunately, passed years ago, she sang a song about the character of Erica Kane. So it's really about, the artist of who I am. I say I'm the Erica Kane of music. That's what I think.
There you go. That'll work.
Yeah.
And I want to take just a second to thank Blazin' Rye for stopping by, because we do a lot of work together. I help him with some of his guests, and he wanted to mention the fact that he has a guest on tomorrow night that we've had on my show before, and that is Sean Taylor Corbett from Broadway, who is the he's the creator and producer of the first all-Native American musical, And if you listen to Blaze and Rye tomorrow night at 8 o'clock on Blog Talk Radio, you can hear all about that fascinating show. It's going to be something really special. And who knows, I have a sneaky suspicion, because Rye often steals my guests, I have a sneaky suspicion, Erica, you're going to get asked to appear on his New York show, the Blaze and Rye radio show, in the very near future, too. So you can look forward to that.
Oh, I do look forward to that.
So what you got coming up now that you've got yourself? You've opened all these doors, shaken up everything, and people are getting to know who Erica Kane is. What's coming up for you?
Well, I was fortunate enough to do a lot of performing this year. I performed at the House of Blues in New York City 2 times. I headlined, and I opened up for Tevin Campbell, and I also did a show in my home state, Connecticut, at the big venue here called Toad's Place. So I've gotten my performance juices flowing. I'm definitely ready to tour. I'm starting to work on my third album, which won't release till the fall of 2014. So we're in pre-production for that. But I'm ready to go on the road. And promote my current album, Substance. I have a new release that just released last month that's on the Amazon chart, so really excited
about
that.
Yeah, you've got a strong position on those Amazon charts. I know you were telling her, we were hearing, I think your manager was telling me, you've got a number 2 that you're hoping is going to hit number 1 this week?
Yeah, I'm waiting for my current album, Substance, is number 2 in Soul, and I've been sitting right next to Amy Winehouse for weeks, so it's been really, really cool just to see that.
That's pretty decent company to be in. You definitely know you've got something going when you get up in that atmosphere.
Absolutely. I'm always taking pictures. I'm snapping screenshots,
Hey, nothing wrong with that. And you be sure and send us some, and be sure and keep in touch with us. Let us know what's going on, and we'd love to have you back again in the future and play some more of your music and maybe talk with you a little longer.
Absolutely. Thank you. I'm honored to be on your show, and we'll definitely be in touch, and I'll keep you posted on all my news, all my good stuff.
Our pleasure, Erica. Thank you so much. We're going to play another song. Would you like to say anything about No More, which is the next song we're going to play of yours?
No More is a R&B slow jam. It's a relationship song. If you're at your wit's end and you don't know what you're fighting or arguing about anymore, and you just want to come back to the way you were with that person, this is the perfect song. It's a beautiful song.
It is every bit of that, and you are a beautiful person. Thank you so much, Erica Kane, for gracing our show today. We look forward to talking to you again in the future. Ladies and gentlemen, Erica Kane, this is called No More. Erica Kane. That's called No More. And we want to thank you once again, Erica Kane. We also want to say hello to some new followers. I want to say hello to Daniel Fogel and all our friends in Bat Yam, Israel. I hope I said that correctly. Shalom to our friends in Israel. Thank you for joining us. Hello to everyone in the chat room. Let's see, Thishia is with us. Hello, Thishia, Gene Dingle, Kathy Fisher, and of course, Blaze and Rye is also with us. Hello to everybody in the chat room. If you have any questions, be sure and post them up, and we'll get to them as quickly as we can. We have another award on the David Bowers Awards today. This one actually goes to movies and music and is dear to the hearts of not only me, but John Bon Jovial as well, and probably to anybody who's ever been there. The home of all those Westerns we grew up watching in the 50s, and a lot more movies like Tremors, Star Trek, Star Wars, and, well, way too many to mention here. This is the weekend of the Lone Pine Film Festival. It's a three-day event saluting 100 years or more of movie making in the shadow of Mount Whitney in Lone Pine, California. It is God's country. It is beautiful there. You're an hour away from some of the best trout fishing in the world. And it's about 4 hours northeast of Los Angeles on the way up to Bishop in the Mammoth Ski Area. It's about an hour and a half, 2 hours west of Death Valley. And if you ever get a chance to go up into that country, it is absolutely worth the trip. Lone Pine Film Festival, where they screen a lot of the films that have been made over the years, including some of the ones that have been very hard to find, some of the classics. And the nice thing is the stars of the film are there to talk about them. You get to meet these people, just like we meet people on the show here. You can sit down or stand there and talk with them for as long, ask them questions, get pictures, autographs, whatever you want. And, of course, they have a lot of gear and merchandise, books and everything that you can look through and buy if you're interested as well. But we take our hats off and salute to the Lone Pine Film Festival. I wish I was there doing the show from there today. I really do. John Bon Jovial, thank you for having introduced me to Lone Pine many years ago.
Many years ago. That was a lot of fun back in those days, too. But you know, David, probably one of the greatest films ever made in the Owens Valley and up around the Alabama Hills, where a lot of these were in Lone Pine, that you didn't mention is Gunga Din.
That's true.
Absolutely phenomenal, incredible movie. You know, not so much for its special effects, but just for the writing and the photography of the day, you know, where they really had to create a mood and not be able to do it through CGI. Gunga Din is probably one of the quintessential movies that was created there in the Owens Valley.
Absolutely, and if you're into movies and movie backgrounds, especially locations, I suggest you Google Lone Pine Film Festival. Also, you can Google the Owens Valley, that area up there. You get some great pictures, some great stories, and you'll get a lot of information, probably everything you always wanted to know and more. We've got to move right along because we've got an awful lot happening today. And before we bring on a special guest, I want to make a special announcement briefly. We'll give you more details in a little bit. We mentioned earlier that we are going to have available the David Bowers Awards gear. And it is official beginning today, and we will post it up on our Facebook page later today. Beginning today, you will be able to order your official The David Bowers Awards T-shirts. Give us a hooray, John Bon Jovial.
Hooray!
David Bowers Awards T-shirts will be available starting later today. Check the David Bowers Awards on Facebook. We'll have information on how you can get your one-of-a-kind David Bowers T-shirts, and there are more goodies coming in the not-too-far-distant future. We'll have some more David Bowers gear for you. I know that's going to excite you. Please, feel free. I want you to order your shirts and send us your pictures, and we will post them on our page. We want to see you. We want to see our listeners in their David Bowers T-shirts. Keep that
in mind.
You're
not right mentioning that. You're not mentioning the grandest of the grand prizes, though, David. One of our lucky listeners will actually get the David Bowers to come over to their house and vacuum their carpet.
What cue cards are you reading? Are you reading Obama's teleprompter again?
I will not compromise on that last statement.
We're going to move right along here. We have a guest that we've spoken to in the past who has done some fantastic music. As a matter of fact, he has one of the top 100 most remembered and most played songs in pop music history. He is doing something a little bit different now. In addition to his music, he has got a new project, and he's going to come on here and tell us about it. So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Rob, play that funky music, White Boy Parisi. Rob, welcome aboard.
Hi, it's nice to be here. How you doing?
Doing just fine, and always glad to have you drop by. How are things up there in the Tampa St. Petersburg Bay Area?
It's a beautiful day, my gosh. The only thing is the Steelers are playing today. That's the only thing that can go bad. But other
than
that,
are they playing now?
They're playing now. They're winning. But, this is one of those years, you know.
We don't want to keep you away from the game.
No, you know, believe me, I'm telling you, you're not keeping me away from too much this year.
Okay, well, good. Now, I understand from what you were telling me, and I'm going to let you explain to the listeners. I understand from what you're telling me, you're kind of backing off for the actual performing and playing the music, and you're doing it more for your enjoyment now than for anything, and you have a new project that you're working on.
Yeah, I stopped actually releasing any product. The last thing I had, it did pretty well on the charts, and it's a good time for me to think about backing off and retiring. But what we've done is we started a scholarship fund for the high school kids in my home area, Indian Creek High School. It's the Rob Parisi Scholarship Fund. And that's what we have. You know, they named the longest street in town after me in my hometown not too long ago. They had a dinner in my honor, and we started a scholarship fund and endowment fund. And, you know, we're going to, in the future, we're going to have concerts, and we're going to have fundraising situations for that. But I'm going to devote most of my time to just trying to help people back in my hometown area and the high school. That's one high school. We're going to try to get all the high schools involved in the future. But all my musician friends are going to get together and help. They've all said that they want to be involved, and I think that's great. I appreciate that.
That is absolutely fantastic. And as you know, we try to promote indie musicians and up-and-coming artists on the show here. And when I hear someone who has actually made it and, you know, has made it to the top of the heap and is actually turning around and paying it forward to future Americans, whether they're musical or not. I mean, let's face it, some people get into music, decide it's not their career, and go into something totally different. But just the fact that they have the opportunity to try and that you're helping them have that opportunity is a tremendous thing. And I'm proud to know you and happy to hear what you're doing.
Well, thank you so much. But you know what? I always say that, you know, I wouldn't be anywhere and I wouldn't have got anywhere if it wasn't for people. And a lot of people forget that. You know, you can't forget who got you to where you're at. And that, to me, has always been something that I was raised. My parents were like that. They always kept me grounded. And, you know, this is what we're trying to do, just pass the torch along. Even to young musicians that come along, I'm trying to tell them, it's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice and just keep your feet on the ground. Remember who got you where you're at, you know?
Absolutely. And again, thank you so much for sharing that with us, and congratulations on actually doing it. And I know your hometown is not only proud, they're thankful to have someone like you as as what we used to refer to as a favorite son. I'm really happy. We did make a note of it. We saluted you on the day of your celebration back there in Mingo Junction, and we mentioned on the show that we were doing that day that you were having a big thing up there, and how we had we tried to get you to shoehorn some time for us, but you were entirely too busy, and everybody appreciates
you. It was crazy that whole weekend, I'm telling you. It was nuts the whole weekend. I didn't have a minute to spare, honest to gosh.
Well, I've seen some of the pictures and seen the videos, and that band that did play that funky music did one hell of a job for you.
They did. That's the high school band. You know, that's what I'm saying. That's one of the great things about that place, and the people there, they really, you know, they're the best. You know, I love them. You know, so we're going to do what we can to just try to help the area and all the musicians that come from the area and just keep it alive, you know.
Fantastic. Well, you be sure and keep in touch with us. Let us know what's going on. And when will you be, do you know when you'll be awarding your first scholarship?
No, but we have put $5,000 into it, my fiance and myself, and we have other donations so far, so I think we're a little bit over $7,000, $8,000, maybe $10,000. We're going to try to raise some more, and next summer I'm going to come back, and we're going to do some concerts and things to raise even more money. And if anybody's interested, you can get a hold of Fran Currency, and she's in Steubenville, Ohio. She is she's an attorney that's in charge of the scholarship fund. Her number is 740-284-8008. And she'll give you all the information that you need. And thanks in advance. Any help you can give us, we appreciate it.
And we appreciate you coming by and sharing that with us. Be sure and keep us posted. Seriously, let us know what's going on. And we'll see what we can do to stir up more interest from our end here.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Oh, and thank you on behalf of us here at the David Bowers Awards and our listeners. And I'm sure I can say on behalf of your family and friends back in Mingo Junction, thank you so much. And again, congratulations, Rob. Thanks for sharing with us.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Here we go.
Transition music there from the artist known as Jafefa. Thank you very much, Jafefa. And right now we have on our telephone, we have some very interesting people for you. We have a new formed rock group out of upstate New York. And we also have the very talented runner of the Tier 1 Talent Agency in upstate New York, Mr. Dan Kohler. And we're going to bring on the band first because we want you to meet them and we want you to hear one of their songs, which we have all queued up and ready to go. So without any further ado, let's bring on the band known as Court E. Hello there.
Hi, guys. This is Dan from Tier 1 Talent. I'm here with Zach and Tristan from Court E. What's going on, David?
Hey, Zach. You say Zach and Tristan?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, we're having a little difficulty. You were kind of far away there, and I know Albany's up the road just a little bit, but we wanted to be sure that everybody'd be able to hear you. Now, tell us a little about how this group got started. I understand, if I understand correctly, we've got these are high school juniors who decided to form a music group. Is that correct?
Yeah. And well, right now we're seniors. We just started our senior year. But we formed back in 10th grade when we had music theory together. And so we had John who played guitar. We had Zach who played, I knew he played percussion. And then this is Tristan, by the way. I played bass. And we said, hey, you know, why don't we try to do something? We had these performance Fridays in our class. So we kind of got together and we played like a Jack Johnson tune. And we liked how we sounded. So.
Well, before we go any further, let's get the obligatory plugs out of the way. Let's get a plug for your high school. What school is it?
Colony Central High School.
What is it?
Colony Central High School.
Oh, Colony. Okay. I couldn't hear you completely to know for sure. Yeah, Colony, for those around the world who aren't familiar with upstate New York, Colony briefly is suburban Albany, the state capital, and it's a very burgeoning community that's about halfway between Albany and Schenectady, which was the home of General Electric, and I know a lot of people have heard of that. So that gives you an idea where these gentlemen are from. Now, what kind of music are you playing?
It's more like an acoustic alternative type of thing. We don't have any electric guitars, but we do have electric bass and pretty loud drum set generally, but it's mainly acoustic.
I know I've listened to some of your music, and I was really impressed. As a matter of fact, that's why I spoke with Dan about getting you on the show. Now, where are you performing now?
Around Albany. We do a lot of venues around Albany and Schenectady and Troy. We haven't really dived into too much around there, but we've done a lot of shows. We won a few Battle of the Bands in Albany, so yeah.
And the Albany market, I know, in recent years has become a much more fertile ground for music and emerging artists than it has been in a long time. And this is a real good thing. What are your plans for the immediate future for the group?
We're writing songs for our second album. The first album was kind of our trial period to see. I mean, it was the first thing any of us had ever gone to a studio and recorded. So we learned a lot. We learned about how to kind of apply that to our live sound. So we're working on new originals and just trying to be as good as possible live, really.
Fantastic. You any target date for when the new album might be ready?
I don't know. I might. It's definitely in the early stages right now. I guess possibly summer of next year. I don't know. Probably, yeah. Definitely next year. I don't know.
Well, keep us in mind if you need a stage to debut it on. We get together and have you back on the show, and you can debut your new album.
Absolutely, we'd appreciate that.
Now I got to ask one question here. Where did the name Court E? For those of you who don't spell well by on the phone or on the radio, that's Court, C-O-U-R-T, and the letter E. Where did that name come from?
It was actually our guitarist, John. We used to go there for rehearsals to his apartment complex, and they're really, really huge apartment complexes, and they're all named by courts, multiple courts. So
we used to play in garage.
Yeah.
The original starting place.
It was totally like the stereotypical garage band. So his apartment complex was E Court. So we just kind of, we were like, oh, Court E, that'd be kind of cool. We didn't really have an idea for a band name. That was it.
I knew when I heard the name that there had to be a backstory there somewhere, and you guys were literally a garage band. That's great. Hey, listen, some great acts have started out that way going all the way back. I remember in the 1960s, Jan and Dean started in their garage with, I think they had a 16-track recorder, and they overdubbed all their voices. And so there's a great history with garage bands. John Bon Jovial, you're sitting there awfully quiet. I know you must be pondering some question you'd like to ask these guys.
Oh, yeah, I'm just sitting here taking it all in and, you know, thinking about the garage band aspect of it, an acoustic garage band. I really like the idea of that, but just, you know, touching on what David just said, yes, some of the truly great bands got their start in a garage, and one that I can think of right off the top of my head were these four young lads from Liverpool, England, the Beatles.
Yeah.
They started off as a garage band. They played these little divey places and cellars in Hamburg, Germany, and in England, and of course, you know, the rest, as they say, is history there. So hopefully something like that would be in the cards for you guys.
Hopefully. I mean, it could go anywhere. We're not, you know, that all that's happened for all those bands, and that's, anybody can do that. We just like playing, and we just like whatever happens is totally cool with us. And we just love playing live. That just doesn't on our business card. We made it really, really big. We're like, we love playing live, and that's just kind of our thing. So people dig it better, so.
Yeah, that is so important. I know we've talked to many of the successful artists that have made a certain level of achievement who've been on the show. Joe Bonsall of the Oak Ridge Boys comes to mind, and I remember him telling me early on that the important thing is if you're in the business for the money, you're in the wrong business. You've got to love the music. You've got to love playing the music. You've got to love performing the music. And he said, then you've got a chance. And it apparently works because they've been around the Oak Ridge Group has been around since the 1940s in one form or another. So apparently the concept works. And we've had many other artists echo the same sentiment. You know, you can't be in it solely for the money. You've got to be in it because you love what you're doing. And that's a great thing. And you guys sound like you do love what you're doing. And I hope that we can work with you as you're progressing and kind of keep track of you and maybe report on how you're doing, how you're progressing, what you're accomplishing, and kind of have a storyline that we can carry on over the years with you.
Yeah, thank you, guys. That'd be really cool. We'd be glad to let you know how we're doing, all shows that come up, the album and everything like that. That'd be great.
Fantastic. That would be great. And you're working with a great guy. Dan is one of the best. And the nice thing about it is he's honest. You don't have to worry about him knifing you in the back. He's going to stand up and do everything he can to help make it go for you. He's a good guy. So you're in good hands there. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to play a track right now by this dynamic new group out of the Albany, New York area, actually out of Colony, New York. The group is Quartz E, and the song is called Punctuation. And there you go. That's called Punctuation by the Colony, New York band Court E. Thank you very much, guys. We're so glad you decided to come on the show and we could share your music. And right now we're going to bring back the man from Tier 1 Talent, Dan Kohler. Dan, welcome back.
Welcome back, David. Thanks for having us again. Thanks for bringing the guys from Court E.
Oh, well, thank you for bringing them to us. We'd love to get good new talent and be able to share it with our listeners around the world. And we love the fact that you come on with some excellent advice, as we can tell all our listeners that are the ones that are interested in making it in the music world, that here's their chance to get some free advice and pick a pro's brains and doesn't cost them a thing. What's our subject for today, Dan?
Well, you know what? We go over the same thing. We keep talking about hard work, hard work, hard work, hard work. I want to sort of jump a little aside from that because you hit on something earlier about the money issue. Let's get down to the meat and potatoes, if you will. Does that sound like a good idea?
That works for me. Lay it on us.
All right. Well, here's the thing. So I once heard years ago an A&R rep, Jason Flom from Atlantic Records, told me, kid, if you want in on this business, you got to be prepared to go 10 years before you make a dime. And I laughed because I thought all these people were making money around me that I knew, my quote-unquote peers. Then I realized the cars they had were leased. You know, they really, there was no money in the game. And after 10 years of myself making this record, in the record business, I wasn't making it in time, but I was touring, being a tour dog. There's really one key to success here. Don't never focus on the money, but yet, I tell everybody, be smart. Learn everything you can about the business. In other words, you can't just take it from a guy like me. And I know I probably shouldn't be saying this because people start to play, Monday morning quarterback or armchair quarterback, whichever one you want to be. And they start second-guessing people like myself. But you need to know about the business of the business, how the revenue stream actually works, because, frankly, it's changed so drastically just in the last 5 years in the industry, so that, you know, you need to be on top of things to make sure your people are staying on top of things. We've all heard about Sting getting ripped off for millions of dollars from his management. People say, how can that happen? Real easy, because when you're busy and you're touring, or you're busy in the studio just writing in your head, your noses in your game, it doesn't take long for big publishing, big licensing money to just get nickel-dimed away. So I think that's the most important thing I can leave today, is to know the business of the business and how the revenue stream works.
And that is something that that we've talked about several times in the past, the fact that you've got to know more than the music. They don't call it music business for nothing. It is a business, and you got to have a business head on you. And, if you accidentally go to school and take business courses, it's not going to hurt you.
Oh, God, no. No. I mean, any kind of school is a great thing. Hell, if you can go to school, perfect your trade, your craft, if you will, put a few dollars in your pocket to get you in so you still have a life, and write a record, write your music, you know, you're actually ahead of the game. Because a lot of guys get stuck that I see, or I've seen in the past, where they're so, I hate to call it focused, it's more like just having blinders on. There's no peripheral vision. They're not looking left or right. They're looking, their eye is so fixated on the prize, they don't realize they're not, you know, there's so much else going on around them that actually is going to make them a better person, a stronger, thicker-skinned artist, and probably a deeper, well-written artist as well. So,
well, one last question before we let you go here, Dan. One of the points you made was about their people, getting the right people. And, you know, of course, that follows, of course, getting people you can trust. What's your advice to an upcoming artist in helping them pick the right people?
Well, I've seen a lot. That's a great question, and actually it hits home for me more so in this last year that I've been in business here. Choosing the right person that you want to work with as an artist that's going to represent you, that's going to work hard, has more about to do with work ethic and passion than it is about shiny cars and beautiful studios and frankly, big BS artists who can talk a great game. And, you know, Flash is just that, Flash. It's like I've said it before, if anybody's followed me online, any of my blogs, I always talk about, you know, I'll take the artist who's got some content over the pretty girl who sings in bad pitch all day long. So I'd say, as an artist, look for somebody who doesn't really want anything from you early on, who's not saying, I need a retainer, I need this, that, and the other thing, who's actually going to go out of their way. Maybe they don't have all the contacts somebody else has, but they've got a few. If they're working hard for you in your corner every day, you know, I think that'd be the first thing to look for. The integrity is something you have to sort of see and look for, ask around, you know. But generally speaking, I'll keep it general, passion. Somebody who has a true passion for what they're doing. If they're always talking about money, they're probably not going to be in your corner, because I'll tell you what, the next time I can bump up to a bigger artist, sure, you might still be on their roster. Who do you think they're going to spend more attention to, the other artist or you? It sort of left to Mike Tyson when he had Kevin Rooney. I say it to people all the time. The minute he left Kevin Rooney and went to bigger and better things there, Big John King, You know, he made a lot more money, but I'll tell you what, it wasn't long before it was the fall of Mike Tyson. You know, and there's something behind that, Dave.
Excellent. As usual, you always come through with some great advice, Dan. We're so glad to have you working with us. And I have a sneaky suspicion from having talked to you recently that you're going to be back around here with some pretty interesting news in the not-too-far-distant future.
You know, I was sort of hoping you were going to tie into that. I didn't want to say anything unless you did. But, you know, I'm hoping we're looking at this award ceremony that's going to be coming up, and I'm hoping with that the gods will smile on us and we might be able to work something out with your great situation. And as a matter of fact, I was thinking as we were talking to Courtney that that might be a great time to let get them to perform at the award ceremony. So, yeah, let's keep our ears open and maybe a great collaboration between Tier 1 Talent and the David Bowers Awards, huh?
That sounds like a plan to me. I look forward to working with you. Dan, again, always a pleasure, always an honor to have you come and share with us. And as I said, I look forward to working with you more in the future. Thanks to you.
Thanks
also to those fabulous guys, Cordy. I look forward to meeting them and hearing more from them.
Yeah,
Dan,
thanks a lot for being with us today.
Great, David.
Thank you,
Dan
Kohler, Tier 1 Talent. And as I said, he's going to be, I think you're going to be hearing some more from him in the very near future. He's got some big stuff he's working on up there in upstate New York and some very interesting stuff. I think you're going to enjoy it. I think you're going to have a lot of fun. Right now, we're going to have a lot more fun because our next guest is truly a rock and roll icon. He's been around for a number of years. We're not going to rub it in because having been around for a few years myself, I know how much I like being reminded of it. But, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to bring on the one and only Mr. Tommy James.
Children behave. That's what they say when we're together.
And we are so happy and proud to be able to welcome aboard this afternoon Tommy James. Come on in, Tommy.
How you doing?
Doing just fine. How are you? Thank you.
Very good.
Fantastic. We had a reason for playing the song that we did to lead you in, which we will get to in just a couple of minutes. But again, I want to thank you for joining us this afternoon. And you have so much going on. It's really hard to know where to start. But first, we have to ask the obligatory question. Since this is the
sure.
David Bowers Awards show, we have to find out if you have an award you'd like to give out this afternoon.
Well, sure. Why not?
Anything that you know, any person or thing that you think it did something really great or something really stupid that you think deserves an award.
Well, no,
or
I'd have to say, truthfully, I'd have to say my manager, Carol Ross, who has just, she's been with me now for 28 years, and I love her to death, and she has done my career a whole lot of good. So that's all I can say. Carol Ross is my awardee.
Well, fantastic, and I can appreciate that from having worked with her in arranging for you to be with us this afternoon. She was most professional, courteous, followed up on everything. I didn't have to send her notes or call her and say, hey, what about this, or we need this or that. I mean, she was right on top of everything.
She's really amazing. She started out, you know, as an actress, and she was on Gunsmoke, and she was on the Wild Wild West. And
then she was
an action dancer with Dick Clark on Where the Action Is. And then she got into the press, you know, public relations, ended up being the head of PR at MCA Records. And what an amazing career she's had. So I'm really lucky to have her.
Well, my partner, John Bon Jovial, partner and co-host here, just flashed that he'd like to ask you a question. And that was
sure. How
the two of you connected. How did you get together?
Well, after I actually played a concert at Madison Square Garden. This is like back in 1987. And she just kind of came as a fan and came back with my agent back into the dressing room. And we started to talk. And the next day she started doing public relations for me. And then gradually she became my manager. So that's how long it's been.
Fantastic, and it's great when you meet someone, and you know whether it's on a personal basis or a professional basis or whatever, but it just clicks. You know,
no, you're right.
This,
it doesn't happen.
Yeah, you
very
don't
often.
Have to think about it and say, "Wow, should I be doing?" It just clicks. You know, it's the
no,
right
you're
thing.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, that's amazing. I commend you both on that. You were both blessed on that count. That's wonderful. And let's see, you have got, I want to get right to your book, because you have an amazing book out. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, Tommy has a book out called Me, the Mob, and the Music, which chronicles his history in the music business, with especially as it relates to Roulette Records and the early years. Tommy, tell us the story about
sure. How
this how you brushed with the mob, basically.
Well, basically, my first hit record, Hanky Panky, sort of exploded unexpectedly out of Pittsburgh back in 1966. And, it was such a freak thing, because it was bootlegged and they sold 80,000 of them in 10 days, and all of a sudden we're sitting at number one. Real Cinderella story. And so I went to Pittsburgh and sort of picked up the first bar band I could find to be the Shondells. Couldn't put the original band back together. And went to New York and sold the master to Roulette Records after a series of bizarre events in New York, where the head of Roulette Records basically called up all the other record companies and said, "This is my record, back off." That was the first offer I couldn't refuse. So, incrementally, you know, when we signed with Roulette Records, we were apparently going to be with them, whether we liked it or not. And little by little, we learned what Roulette Records was all about. In addition to being a functioning independent record label, and a pretty good one because they had a lot of hits, they were also a front for the Genovese crime family in New York. And, of course, we didn't know that when we signed. We learned it. We learned it slowly. And, they were using Roulette as everything from a social club to illegal bank accounts and running drugs and everything through there. And so, I mean, it was something we just absolutely couldn't talk about. So we were walking on eggshells for a long time. And we had to constantly decide amongst ourselves whether we were going to take our lives in our hands and try leaving, because we were their biggest act by far, and rocking the boat and leaving, or and getting zero royalties, I might add, by the way, or staying, because we were having such tremendous success there, because we were making money from other areas like touring and BMI, radio airplay, and so forth. So, you know, I think we ended up making the right decision by staying because, you know, I know we would have not had the kind of success we had at any of the other major corporate labels because we, especially with a record like Hanky Panky, I can tell you at CBS or RCA or any of the other labels that said yes, we would have gotten lost in the numbers and, you know, maybe been a one-hit wonder, and that would have been it. At Roulette, they actually needed us and left us alone and allowed us to sort of morph into whatever we could become. And as a result, we had complete creative control of our own career.
So you sort of became like a free-form act with them.
Correct. And
wow.
And so that is the premise of the book. And it's we couldn't talk about any of this, though, of course. And in fact, I was reluctant talking about it, you know, writing the book. But we really, Martin Fitzpatrick, my co-author, and I got about a third of the way through the book, and we were going to call it Crimson and Clover and have a nice music story about the studio and all that stuff.
Sure.
Well, we got about a third of the way through it and realized that if we don't tell the whole Roulette story, we're really cheating ourselves and everybody else. So we had to wait. I was real nervous finishing the thing because some of these guys were still walking around. So we had to basically wait until the last of them passed away. And then that happened in 06, actually December of 05. And we felt at that point then we could finish the book. So we rewrote the book and told the truth about Roulette. And it took us about 3.5 years to actually get it all right and get all the facts straight and everybody's name spelled right. And then Simon & Schuster grabbed it immediately. And we were just thrilled because usually they do presidential memoirs and things like
right,
that. So we were really very flattered that they took a book. And then all of a sudden we started getting the calls for the movie rights and the Broadway rights. So it's going to be a film. It's going to be a movie within the next 2.5 years. So produced, I might add, by Barbara DeFina, who did Goodfellas and Casino and, oh boy, Hugo 2 years ago with Martin Scorsese, you know. Just
yeah, you've got some good people connected with that. I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to lead into the fact that, yeah, you do have the workings, the groundwork laid out for both Broadway and for Hollywood.
Right, right. So this is really quite amazing. I've never been an author before, and so this is just a very new venture for me, and I'm just amazed at the public's reaction to it. We're in our 7th printing now.
Are you
and,
really? I have read the book. Thank you very much. And it's a good read. It's a fun read. It's one of those books where you can enjoy it whether you're reading it because you like to read or because you're especially interested in the music or if you're a Tommy James fan or if you're a historical fan. For whatever reason, it's an easy read and it's an enjoyable and interesting one. It keeps you
Thank
hooked.
You.
I know this is a cliche, but I'm going to say it anyway. It's one of those books you're going to start reading sometime when you've got the time to sit down and you're ready to read. And you're going to find 4 hours later you're still reading it and don't really want to put it down until you finish the next chapter.
Oh, well, that's very good of you to say it, really. Is. Well, you know, we tried to write it with a little humor and, it's three very different subjects sort of being covered in one book. And so even though it's an autobiography, we had to constantly edit ourselves. Because for every story I wanted to tell, there was about 10 that we, you know, didn't have time for. So that's just, we're at the screenplay stage now, by the way. It's going to be distributed by Universal. But right now, what's really interesting is that the screenplay is such a different way of telling the story than the book. You know, the book, you know, sort of a narrative and tells you
right.
the facts of what happened. But the screenplay is actually told with dialogue and conversations between people. So it's a very
right.
different way of telling the same story. And I'm getting
a
really
different
education.
Staging. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. And I can't wait to see that. I know
You know, if the treatment is as good as, say, Jersey Boys, and of course the casting is right, you've got a winner. You just know, and you know,
well,
the fact that so many people have signed onto the idea already says that you've definitely got something going there.
Well, thank you so much.
Listen, I have a little trivia for you. As a matter of fact, I've been plotting because I like to surprise people and, you know, just give them something to remember. I found something I wanted to know, Tommy. Your background in the music business, you've been in what, since the early 60s?
Since, well, yes, I have been. I've been in the major leagues since 66, but certainly I've been doing it all through the early 60s too.
Well, I'm kind of a music trivia buff myself, and I found this song. I'm gonna play this song for you, and I want you to give me your honest personal opinion, okay? Can you give me a couple of minutes just to play this for you?
Yeah.
I think our listeners are going to like this. I want you to hear this now. You to rate that record for
me. Sounds like a number one record to me. I got that. That's the worst record ever made. And not only that, but you had to play the whole thing, didn't you?
Oh, absolutely.
You couldn't just stop 30 seconds into the. Had to play the whole horrible record, didn't you?
Hey, that's what we're here for. I thought about playing just a clip of that, but I knew two things would happen. One, listeners would feel cheated because they didn't hear the whole thing, especially when they found out what it was.
Yes.
And two, there would be somebody that would write me a nasty letter saying, you didn't play that whole song.
Oh,
tell us the story.
Just so you know, that was the first record I ever made. I was 13 years old. It was on a little label called Northway Sound Records. And that was the first song that I wrote that was on a record. So, and my voice had just changed. So if you heard a couple of squeaks in there, that was why.
I found that, as a matter of fact, my buddy Dave Kapulski up in New Jersey had heard it on
Dave the Rave, yes.
I heard that, and I said, I've got to have that for when Tommy comes on the show.
And if you really want to hear a bad record, wait till you hear the flip side.
Don't play it.
Well, don't do it.
This is the digital version, so you're lucky. I don't have the flip side yet, but I'm definitely going to find a copy of it for my own library. Anyway.
Okay.
Now you know we've got an audience out there that are just hanging on their teeth, asking. They're saying, David, are you going to ask him? And I'm going to ask you right now.
Okay.
Was there really a Judy?
Yes, there really was. Yes, there really was.
And does she know?
She knew, she knows, and I haven't spoken to her in about 45 years.
Well, hopefully that was just coincidental, right? It had nothing to do with the song.
No, of course not. No. Okay. Of course it had everything to do with the song. You know, I would. That was more important to me than making the record, you know. So what can I say? Well, you know, it's what's so amazing is I remember when we made that record, and I remember thinking to myself, you know, we're starting a journey with this, and who knows where this is going to end up. And truthfully, it was, you know, one of those magic moments when I first saw my name on a record. I can't tell you what it did to me.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah.
Oh God, it was the greatest feeling in the world, and we got on local jukeboxes, and of course it died miserably real quick. But by the way, Hanky Panky, which was the second record that I did, was you know, the same type of thing. It was a year and a half later, but you know, Hanky Panky was basically the same group. And it was the same bunch of people. And that's why it was so surprising when the record took off. You know, it took off 2 years after we released it. But so my high school years, junior high and high school, were real interesting.
I can say so. And you really, in retrospect, you had a relatively short run-up period. I mean, maybe not an overnight success story, but one less than successful record before you had your first hit, and you're talking
yes.
about over a 2
well,
year
well, you know, the record hit when I was right out of high school, so I was real lucky, actually, that the record didn't happen when I was, a sophomore and a junior in high school. I was lucky that it happened when I got out, you know.
And we just had, I don't know if you got a chance to listen or not, but we had just had a guest on before you that's three, they're high school seniors now from upstate New York in the Albany, New York area, who are at that point in their careers. They started in the middle of their sophomore year with a rock band doing, they do primarily acoustic rock, but very nice sound they have, and very professional, especially
well, listen,
considering you're talking.
You know, when you get that stuff in your blood that you just want. I all I ever wanted to do, honestly, was be one of those rock and roll guys. You know, and it's a good thing it happened because I don't know how to do anything else.
Well, I can. John and I can both relate. John Bon Jovi and I, we met in Tampa radio back, not quite in the 60s, but I think it was, 73 or 74?
73. I think it was 73, though.
Yeah,
WQYK in Tampa.
Right.
Oh, really?
We can relate to what you were saying because this is in our blood. Why do you think we're still doing this 40 years later?
Right. It's not like we got brain surgery to fall back on or anything.
And, exactly. And
this thing better work.
And in my case, it was, you know, I always wanted to be a rock star too. And then I found out I couldn't sing, and so I decided, well,
that can
I can't
put a damper
sing
on things. Well, you know, something. Truthfully, I'm amazed as I have traveled over the years that how many people, you know, news guys, weathermen, people in the arts started out in rock bands. And, you know, one of the things that happened with this book is that, you know, I went into great detail about the lousy equipment we used at first because that's all we could afford and all the little things that the frustrations that happen with a local band starting out and fighting for your dignity and all that stuff. And it's just amazing to me how many people immediately jumped on me jumped all over that and say, Tom, what kind of guitar did you have when you first started? I say a silver tone. I had one of those, you know, and before anybody could afford Gibsons and Fenders, you know. truthfully, and it's just so amazing when I talk about the equipment and the microphones we used and setting up the PA system, you know, when you're in a local cover band and just all that stuff. It's just amazing. It's sort of like Star Trek people who, you know every word of dialogue when they go to a convention. That's kind of like what it's like.
Well, I can, as I said, we can definitely relate because we don't have anything to fall back on either, but we love the music. It's beyond that. It's easy to say we love the music, but I think it really transcends that. We enjoy sharing it with people. I mean, let's face it, if it were just the music, we could sit in our living rooms or our dens and play music until our ears go off.
No, you're right. It becomes a way of life. Rock and roll is much more than just music. It's an entire realm. It's a universe.
It is. It is every bit of that. Now, moving on here on the thought about the book and it moving on to Broadway and then on to Hollywood also, you have started, as I understand, arranging music for the musical, and you are going to share with us in a few minutes here, in a few moments, a new track, which I've been told, as a matter of fact, that Carol told me that it has never been played on the air yet.
This
is a new version of an old Tommy James song. Tell us about how this came about.
Sure. Well, basically what happened is that we are, this song was a song I brought the original Shondells back from Pittsburgh to go in the studio with me and do. This is with the original group. And we did it a few months ago. And it's going to be the closing credits of the in the movie. Now, this is the song that's going to play over the closing credits. And essentially what it boils down to is that Morris Levy, who was the head of Roulette Records and a mob associate, sort of became, you know, like a stepfather to me. And the very last scene in the movie is where Morris dies. This is all true. And we take the song "I Think We're Alone Now," and we do it in a totally different way. Instead of young kind of poppy, puppy love song, it completely changes the meaning of the song because Morris has died, and I think we're alone now, meaning that all of us in the group. And so the very last scene is at a show I did in 1990 in Chicago, and we just learned that Morris died, and I never got a chance to say goodbye to him. And the limo takes off, and as it does, the credits roll, and this song starts to play.
And with that, we're going to play this song. Ladies and gentlemen, for the first time anywhere in the world, this is a brand new version of "I Think We're Alone Now."
we're holding on to each other's hands, trying to get away into the night. Then you put your arms around me, we tumble to the ground, and you say, I think we're alone now. This doesn't seem to be any.
Tommy James, now the 2013 version, which will be the theme under the closing credits of the movie. And Tommy, you brought up a very interesting point I want to follow up on here.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned your relationship with Morris Levy. Now, Morris Levy was very high up in the Genovese family in New York City. He was definitely not an underling that you messed with. And
no.
At the same time, you and he became, you had a very close relationship, which is, it created quite a dichotomy. I mean, here's this figure whom most people would be totally in fear of, and at the same time, you two became very close.
Well, you know, it was a strange relationship. That really was. It was, love-hate relationship. Every time I go to say something really nasty about Morris, because Morris was truly an infamous character, I always got to remember that if it wasn't for Morris Levy, there wouldn't have been a Tommy James. And that's a very strange position to be in. You know, one of these days I got to ask the good Lord why he blessed me through these people.
In such a strange way.
Yes, and I truthfully, it's one of those things that I don't know the answer to, and other than it was a very dysfunctional relationship. I mean, a lot of yelling and screaming, a lot of fear in many ways. Things could have ended very badly. We were very lucky to get out of there in one piece. I try to do the story justice. I try to tell it like it really was, with all the characters involved. But it was one of those strange relationships that, hit kid from the Midwest, New York thug, and it worked. I don't know. I don't know what the deal was. I'm going to ask someday.
I can imagine it really. It really had to play on your mind at times, because
a lot
you said
of schizophrenic feelings about the whole thing.
Absolutely. I mean, here you're at one time you're working for the man, so you have to have an employer-employee respect.
Right.
And at the same time, you're at times in total abject fear of the man, and at other times you're looking at him almost as a surrogate father figure who's mentoring you in the business.
Yeah, it was the whole thing is very strange, and it was nothing I'd ever want to go through again, but in some strange ways I do miss the guy. So however, I would never be able to do what I'm doing now if he were still alive, no doubt about it. You know, there was no way you were going to be independent in that kind of a relationship. So
yeah, and it's kind of ironic that it has played out this way, that such a big part of who you are has only been allowed to become public knowledge that you could share because of the fact that he's no longer around.
And all of this, not just him, but the rest of the bunch that was up there.
Right.
So, I'm thankful in a way, and I regret it in a way. You know, I don't know. It's a real strange bunch of feelings I have about it.
I can well imagine. Now, you're not only still recording new material, and I am always impressed by the fact that you are still performing as a headliner. You're not performing just oldie shows, and I'm not putting down the groups and artists that do, because that's a I love the oldie shows. There's a place for them.
I know exactly what
but
you're
the fact
saying.
That you're the fact that you are still a you're still mainstreaming. You're still a headliner and doing headline shows is fantastic, and I think it's a tremendous testament.
Thank you.
Not only to you, but to your music as well. I mean, let's face it, you're doing your own material. You're not doing Sinatra's material. And that's
thank you for saying so.
And John Bon Jovial, you have a question also.
Yeah, I do, Tommy. As far as your touring calendar, do you ever plan on getting down to Southwest Florida?
We used to come down there often. Somehow in the last few years we haven't gotten down there as much. But yes, indeed, I love it down there, and Florida knows how to rock. That's all I can say. A lot of great fans down there. We get a lot of email and a lot of correspondence with Florida fans. And I would love to come down. I sure would. I have relatives down in West Palm, as a matter of fact.
Oh, it's on the other side of the state from us.
Yep.
We're in Naples, which is
yes.
down in Southwest Florida.
Right.
And, it'd be great to have you come down to the Naples-Fort Myers area, and it'd be great to see
you. I love it
you.
Down there. I sure do.
Tommy, you're not only still recording new material, but you're also, I'm told, mastering a lot on vinyl now.
Well, you know what? We have our own label, Aura Records, A-U-R-A.
Right.
And we have a lot of product in the stores now. We have a new distribution deal with Allegro distributors, who are international. And right now, we have three products that we're working on. One is our DVD of our live show at the Bitter End in New York, and the CD and the DVD of that show. It's Tommy Davis Shandell's Live at the Bitter End. And then we have what we call our 40-year package, which is all of the singles, all 47 singles that we've released since Judy and Long Ponytail, by the way.
Yeah, two
and,
amazing
CDs,
yes. I might say. The 40
all
years.
All 47 of them. And,
Live at the Bitter End, that's another amazing CD.
Thank you.
The electricity that's in that is just tremendous.
It was an amazing night. And then we have released our Christmas album. We actually released the CD in 2008, but this year, for the first time, we're putting it on vinyl. And, I haven't had my voice on vinyl in over 30 years, and it's a strange feeling. It's so great. I can't tell you how great it was to produce vinyl, to make vinyl. The idea of an A and a B side. It's such a different listening experience for the fan. You know how you gently take the vinyl piece out of the jacket, and
exactly
then you
right.
take it
keep
out of the sleeve
off
and
the grooves.
You put it down on the turntable and gently put the needle down on and then you only hear half the album.
Right.
And then you got to get up and turn it over, and it but the sound that comes off the disc is so alive.
Yeah, exactly.
So alive.
Exactly
so
the right
different
word.
Than a CD.
Well,
where it
I
just
remember
disappears.
When my wife and I were dating back in the early 70s, I'd get my records out and I'd get a very clean white cotton sock that I would use to clean it with.
Yeah. And it's such a different experience for the fan too, because even though CD overall sounds better, the vinyl is just so, hands-on. And I love vinyl. I'm a vinyl nut. So we put out I Love Christmas, the I Love Christmas album, on vinyl this year. And we've gotten a great response to it already. So it's going to be, Amazon, Walmart, our website, TommyJames.com, everywhere you can get CDs, you can pretty much get the vinyl.
And we're going to be playing a track from the Christmas album here at the end of the show. But
good.
Yeah, absolutely got to do that. As a matter of fact, I'd love to play a bunch of tracks. And I introduced John Bon Jovial to your 40 Years album, which he has
grabbed and locked as a...
I can't say that I've grabbed it. As soon as you gave it to us, my wife grabbed it, and I haven't seen it since. But she tells me it's really excellent.
By the way, I'm going to be on Sirius Radio tomorrow at noon for... I did a show up there called Tommy James, my favorite 45s. And it's going to be on 60s on 6 on Sirius tomorrow at noon, if you don't mind me getting that little plug in there.
Oh, absolutely. Go for it.
And we're going to be doing a YouTube channel. This is really interesting. YouTube, the people at YouTube came to me a few weeks ago and asked me if I would do a Tommy James channel. And it's sort of like doing a little mini TV show.
Right.
And so what it boils down to is little 5 to 8 minute vignettes we put up every week or two of us in the studio and hearing music and you're able to download stuff, you know, from you know, in stream. And it's so great because it means we'll be able to release new material now on YouTube, which is really going to be great. And
that's
going to start after the first of the year.
Well, while we're slipping in personal plugs and personal plots and come down to see me in my town, the heck with the rest of Florida, while we're slipping all those in, let me just interject one thing. If you, in your dealings with Sirius Radio, if you ever happen to run across Bill Rock of Elvis Radio on there.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. You be sure and give him my best. I haven't talked to Bill in quite a while.
I will do that. You know, I did an interview for the Elvis Channel not too long ago.
Yeah, Bill was Bill
was
my boss. Bill was my boss back in the day.
Oh,
Back at WTRY in Troy, back in the early
70s. I know TRY.
I was there just before I came to Florida.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, Bill was my boss, and
I used to listen to that station when I had my farm in upstate New York.
Oh, wow! you may have even heard my big mouth back then. Who
it's
knows?
Very possible.
Yeah, I wasn't there very long. I was at a station in Schenectady. We were an oldies before the oldies format really became famous. We were an oldies station, WSNY, I was there for about 4 years, sandwiched around my 20-year hitch, my 2 years in the Army, and then I was at WTRY, and then I migrated to Florida after that. So there's more than
you have
ever
been around the block a couple of times.
Yeah, right. I think I was put away wet too, but that goes without saying. Listen, you've also got a thing going with iTunes Radio, haven't you?
Well, iTunes, it's Orchard. Orchard is the provider of iTunes. We have a lot of material up on iTunes, but the Orchard is going to be teaming up with YouTube on this effort that I'm doing, the Tommy James channel. And it's going to be, they're going to be providing advertisers and budgets and things like that. So the interesting thing, though, is it's being handled like radio. Like a radio station.
Mm-hmm.
And YouTube is so interesting because it, you know, has evolved into this sort of like the global radio station. And just all kinds of really interesting things are on YouTube. Everything, of course, you know all that. But what's so amazing is that, to me, is that we'll get a chance to release new stuff, actually make new records.
That is tremendous. That's outstanding. And the fact that you're still releasing new music is great. I'm really, really happy
to see
that. And we also have a couple of more firsts before we close out the show today. And one of them I wanted to bring up right now because I talked to Carol, and she and you were both amenable to working along and being a first on the David Bauer Show. We're going to introduce something that's... it's kind of halfway new. It's not something unheard of, but I know of nobody that is really doing it on a regular basis, and we're going to try it and see what the reaction is. We call them audiographs. What we're doing is we're going to have our guests on the show. We're going to pick a winner each week, and we're going to give away an audiograph from our guest. And what an audiograph is, for those of you who collect autographs, Okay. We figure since this is the technological age and we are an audio medium, why not take the autograph and make it an audiograph? So we're going to ask a question, and to make it fair to everybody so the people in the chat room don't have an advantage over the people on the phones or the people are listening and not on the phone or in the chat room, we're going to give everybody a fair shake. Here's how it works. We're going to ask you a question in just a couple of seconds here when I get through rambling. And we're going to ask you a question about Tommy James' interview here today. And you're going to, if you want to win a free audiograph from Tommy James, you post up your answer on Facebook. This way, everybody in the world will get to see who comes up with the first answer correctly. Whoever posts the correct answer first, we will get in touch with you and get your name and email. And we will forward that to Tommy. And Tommy will record for you an autograph just as he would if he were meeting you in person and writing one. So get ready for that. We're going to ask the question. I guess now is as good a time as any, isn't it, Tommy?
I think so.
Okay. Our question for the day, and we're going to make it a real tough one here now. We've only mentioned this about 15 times, so listen closely. First person to answer this on the David Bowers Awards Facebook page is going to get a free audiograph from Tommy James. The question is, what is the name of Tommy James' book? Get busy. Post up your answer. What is the name of Tommy James' book on the David Bowers Award Facebook page? We'll find the winner in a little bit. It'll be after the show before we get to do that. But we'll find the winner. We'll get in touch with you. We'll get your information forwarded on to Tommy, and you will get an audiograph from Tommy James. So go for it. What is the name of Tommy's book? And Tommy, back
yes.
to you. Back to you. You have one other. Yeah, we have time for a quickie here. There's a quick story I know that I was really intrigued when I heard. How did the tune Mirage come about?
Oh, yeah. You did your homework. Mirage was the follow-up to I Think We're Alone Now. And back in 1967. And this was just after we had recorded the final version, mixed the final version of I Think We're Alone Now. We went over to Bo Gentry, one of the producers on the record, went over to his apartment in New York, and we were listening to it. And we had a 7.5 IPS, inches per second tape, reel-to-reel, that we were listening to. And I don't know if you remember reel-to-reels, but if you got it on upside down, it played backwards.
Right. Exactly, yes.
So we accidentally had it on upside down, and we played it, and we're listening to that, and we're looking at each other, and we said, you know, that's not bad. That's not a bad chord progression. And we started listening to it, and the chord progression was real interesting because it was, I think we're alone now, in reverse. And don't you know, Bo and Richie went off and wrote it, and it became Mirage, our next single. That's a true story.
You worked with Bo and Richie for a long time.
Long time. And they've both passed away now, but these were great friends of mine. And I was very lucky to find them when I did, because at Roulette, you know, they really weren't much help to me. When I first got up to Roulette, I remember going into Morris's office and thinking some nice grown-up is going to sort of walk me through this,
yeah,
what's coming
right.
next.
And
And instead, I get, so what's next? And I'm going, yes, I'm working on some things. Of course, I had nothing.
Yeah.
And so I was very lucky that Bo and Richie came along right at that moment and sort of created that bridge between not knowing what to come with next and when I started to produce the group. So the next several records, half dozen records, came from Bo and Richie, beginning with I Think We're Alone Now.
That's amazing stuff. You have so many amazing stories. We could probably spend the entire afternoon with you. I wish we could. One other question I wanted to get in here, and that is because some wise person at one time made the comment, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery.
Mm-hmm.
If that's the case, you have been highly flattered because your songs have been covered by a who's who of artists. I know R.E.M., Prince, for just a couple. How do you like other people's interpretations?
I'm very flattered by it. I'm very honored and very flattered when somebody thinks a quick way to a hit record is to do one of our old songs. I really, it amazes me, and I'm always really intrigued by how another artist interprets your music. I'll never forget one night I'm having dinner with a friend of mine in New York, and I'm listening, and through the piece, you know, they had the soft music playing in the background, and I'm hearing all of a sudden, you know, on violins, I'm hearing plink, 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 and I'm going, what is that? It sounds familiar, and all of a sudden I realize that's Moni Moni being played by the Boston Pops.
Right. Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. You're kidding me. And doing it with violins and cellos,
yep.
and you know, so it's always fascinating listening to somebody else do your song.
Well, you know, John Bon Jovi and I were until we thought better of it, we were thinking about getting the, you know, we did we played the original version of I Think We're Alone Now when we brought you on, and we were thinking about getting the karaoke version of Moni Moni. Starting that off and just going, you know, here he comes now, it's Tommy. But then we thought,
boy.
We didn't, we really didn't want to hear the dogs howling in the background either.
I'm not sure about that one.
No. And every time, I used to sing in the shower until every time I sang, the water stopped. So I gave that up a long time ago.
Yeah.
Tommy, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on
the
show today.
Well, thank you. I really have enjoyed it. And you obviously did your homework and asked all the great questions.
Oh, well, I've been listening to your music for more years than I care to remember now. I mean, I've been listening to it as long as you've been making it. So,
wow.
There, that says it all. We're going to leave with one more first for Tommy James. Tommy James is going to be the first Christmas song ever played on the David Bowers Awards. You heard him mention his Christmas album, which is available now, and now available on vinyl also. And we're going to play a track. Tommy, tell us about the track, the title track, I Love Christmas.
Sure. Well, I Love Christmas was a song that, strangely enough, I never wrote down with a pen and paper. It was been circling in my head for many, many years. And I finally got in the studio with it, and we put it out several years ago, and then decided to do a whole album of Christmas music, which I had never done. And this was the first, and it ended up on about 3,000 radio stations over the last 2-3 years, and we're just real proud of this one. I recorded it with Jimmy Wisner, my cohort that I've been making records with for 40 years now. And it's called I Love Christmas, and I hope you dig it.
And here it is. Tommy, thank you once again ever so much. Look forward to having you back on the show in the near future.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tommy.
Thank you so much.
Here's Tommy James and I Love Christmas.
us. Thank you so much for being with us, Tommy James. And thank you, audience, for being with us. We love you. We'll look forward to having you here next month. Here's John Bon Jovial to tell you what to expect.
You betcha. Thank you, David. The David Bowers Awards is produced by The David Bowers for Stick It In Your Ear Productions from the studios of Computer Help USA in beautiful Naples, Florida. It's available for free on download from Blog Talk Radio and iTunes. Be sure to click the follow link on our Blog Talk Radio page and get reminders of our upcoming shows. Be sure to like The David Bowers on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Be sure to join us for the David Bowers Awards Sunday, November 10th, 2 p.m. Eastern, and that is 11 a.m. Pacific, when our guests will include not one, but two lovely ladies, the incomparable Gina Zavalis and breakout Native American newcomer Brianna Lee Pruitt. And Bobby Brown Jr. That's right. Plus, we'll have special rock star 101 professor for the new indie music internet radio, BFM. Be here for this one. So until then, for the David Bowers and all of us inmates here at the asylum, this is John Bon Jovial saying thank you for joining us. Have a wonderful month ahead, and we'll see you next time from beautiful Naples, Florida, and the David Bowers Awards.